Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission?
Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. We are on set here in Toronto shooting your digital cover story. I'm so excited to be working with you and also just so many beautiful gowns and dresses and things that Amber has pulled. She's a superstar.
Yeah, she's done an amazing job. My team is pretty incredible.
Yes, they are a superstar team. I'm so excited to be chatting because not just because I'm a fan of your work and Canada's Drag Race, but because drag culture is really just everything and everywhere. And it's you know, everything everywhere all at once. Now it seems like it's quite the phenomenon, it feels like.
Yeah, it feels like we're taking over.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It's well overdue, I feel like.
I feel like it is. I think it's long been an underground kind of movement and community, but it's been an underground community that's really kind of informed lots of different pockets of culture, pop culture, fashion, stuff like that. Like all those kind of things. A lot of things have been pulled from drag queens without us getting credit for it.
100%. We were just talking in the office about like what the kids are saying these days. And a lot of the words, I'm like, oh, I've heard all of these words and phrases before in like on Drag Race or in just the community. And I'm like, this does not, for once, I'm like, oh, I actually know what the kid, or I understand what the kids are saying, you know?
And I mean, like, a lot of it's borrowed from drag culture. And a lot of drag culture slang is borrowed from ballroom.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
all kind of, we kind of borrow from each other. And it's nice to see drag kind of get a really main stage platform. And also ballroom, in that sense, with shows like Pose. What was that other?
I know what you're talking about. The competition.
Yes, the competition. What? Yeah. I cannot remember the name of it right now. But those were two shows. I was so happy to see those shows because so much has been borrowed from that culture as well as drag culture. And it was so nice to see them get a spotlight and actually get their flowers for
yes,
that.
Getting their respect.
Yes.
What brings you the most joy when it comes to the art of drag and being a drag queen?
What brings me the most joy?
Yeah.
As an artist, getting a good paycheck for my work is really nice, honestly, because like I've been in the arts for a long time and I've been severely underpaid for a long time. And Drag Race was the first time I actually started to make actual money doing what I like to do. And that was really nice to like not be a struggling artist for a second.
That's such an interesting intersection, dude, because when you think about the dialogue around commerce and the dialogue around culture, and historically, or a lot of people try to see them as church and state, but when it comes to drag, those two worlds, it's long overdue have time for them to overlap. And so do you see those two worlds being separate in terms of drag as an art form and then drag as a business for yourself, or are they really like a part of the same conversation?
Drag is a business for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, drag is my business. That's what I do. So I just do still see it as an art form. Absolutely. But I think it more so became the business side of it kind of took over more when it became my full-time job, you know? And became how I pay my bills and how I put money into my pension and pay my mortgage.
Yeah.
Like, it's my job.
Yeah. And your way of life.
And my way of life. Yeah. And it is art. Absolutely. But I think something can be art and be business at the same time.
Yeah. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
No. I mean, I just think it's so silly that like this whole suffering for your art thing and like poor starving artists, like artists work so hard and they contribute so much to the world that they deserve to be paid well.
Yeah.
And that's not just drag queens, that's any artist.
Absolutely. Speaking on that, you know, drag has always been around. Mm-hmm. But when we look at the art of drag as part of mainstream media and pop culture media as we know it today, it's obvious that it's thriving. It's it's a big moment, and not just a moment, but a big part of culture in general. We just finished season 16 of the American version of RuPaul's Drag Race. There are multiple franchises of Drag Race, as you know, around the world. There's a Vegas show, Broadway debuts, book deals, tours, and so much more, right? What do you think it is about drag queens and drag culture that is resonating so much with people, especially in this moment in time?
Well, I think for a lot of young kids, seeing queer people on TV, seeing drag queens on TV, really helps them and really makes them feel less alone in the world and gives them someone to look up to, you know? Because I know when I was younger, I didn't have anybody who looked like me or who felt like me or who thought like me on TV. So I think that's a big part of it. I think it's just a fun escapism thing too. Mm-hmm. It's a fun world full of joy and color and glitter and laughter and a little bit of shade that people can kind of get lost in. And it's just something different, you know? It's still kind of has, I mean, it's mainstream, but it still kind of has that underground feeling where it's just something different and like, oh, this, is this allowed? Like, and I think it teaches people to be confident and teaches people to love themselves and find joy in themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think obviously drag culture is not just for the queer community. I'm sure like a big part of your audience is not exclusively queer too. There's a lot of, you know, it's universal in really its ability to bring joy and bring humor into the conversation, especially when we think about everything else that's going on in the world. People kind of need a little bit of levity and, as you said, escapism, just to kind of, you know, enjoy life as well too, right?
Totally.
Yeah, it's really interesting. At the end of each season on RuPaul's Drag Race, there's always a dialogue about what the future of drag is. What do you think from your perspective, having, you know, worked as a drag queen now and hosting your own shows, what does the future of drag look like for you today? And what's your kind of greatest hopes for it and ambitions for where the culture is going?
I don't really know what the future of drag looks like. I hope it just keeps growing and it keeps thriving and it keeps being part of the mainstream conversation and it keeps informing popular culture the way it does now. And I just think that more opportunities just keep coming up for drag artists and queer people in general. I think that's the name of the game, inclusivity and diversity.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Over the course of your career, has your kind of own perception and perspective of drag changed or been challenged or evolved over the years for you?
I guess with things like RuPaul's Drag Race, it opened my eyes to the possibilities of what we could do. I guess I always thought it was very limited. Like, okay, if you're a drag queen, you're just going to be performing in a bar for the rest of your life. Like, I never in my wildest dreams really imagined that we could be doing world tours and appearing in movies and TV shows and Broadway and be so embraced in all these different sectors the way we have been. So that's kind of really been amazing.
It's opened up a whole universe of possibilities. Absolutely. And business ventures too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just building kind of
makeup brands and YouTube channels and home renovation shows. Yeah, like you name it. Yeah, it's great.
It's really been incredible to see because I think it's also challenged a lot of viewers and people on, you know, people that are part of the community on social media to understand that the culture and the art of drag really kind of transcends what the stereotypical or traditional perspectives of it has been limited to in the past. And drag queens can be TV hosts, entrepreneurs, business moguls, media moguls, as well as anyone else, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, building on that, drag is such a big business. In what ways do you think, because we cover a lot of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs are everywhere. They come from all walks of life, have a lot of different perspectives. And I really think that a drag queen is really like quintessentially the picture of an entrepreneur in that there is a lot of tenacity and grit and owning your own business and
being your own business,
your own brand. So in what ways have you seen or has entrepreneurship manifested in your life?
I mean, drag queens are definitely self-starters. Like, we kind of have to do everything ourselves. Like, we're responsible for the hair, the makeup, the wigs, the numbers, the personality, like everything. We have to do everything. Like, a painter has to go out and buy some paint and a canvas. We have to literally like clothe ourselves from head to toe and then figure out what we're going to do in it.
Right.
Like, it's a lot of work. So yeah, I never really thought of myself as an entrepreneur until you said that, but I guess we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely really are.
And like resourceful, because especially if you're in a community that does not have, that is not necessarily connected to, you know, epicenters of culture, you really have to try to be resourceful to make an impact or build your own community, whether that's digital or in person as well. Mm-hmm. And that's such a tenet of being an entrepreneur as well, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How do you think your perspective of your own brand and your business has changed over the years for you in terms of how you wanted to build for yourself?
Honestly, my whole life, my brand and my business, like, things have kind of just fallen in my lap and fallen into place, like, randomly, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I've never really had a plan. I guess my one kind of plan was to get on Drag Race. That's always kind of been a goal of mine. But, like, after that happened, I didn't really have a plan. And then Canada's Drag Race just was, like, kind of given to me. And I was like, oh, great. I guess this is what I'm going to do next. So I never
Serendipity.
Really, yeah, literally. I never really have, like, a plan. I know that sounds horrible and I probably should, but I'm not great at planning things. So I don't really have a plan for what's going to happen next. I just kind of go with it and see where it takes me.
I mean, it's worked out really well for
you.
So
far, so good. So far, so good. It also makes, I'm also a very anxious person, so it makes me very anxious. I feel like I should have a plan, but I don't. But I just don't know what I want to do next.
I feel like the universe is just giving you the path that, or letting you choose which path you want to go on. And then it's, you've kind of been able to build from that.
I have been, yeah. I've been very lucky.
Yeah. I mean, so much of what I'm seeing now, at least in terms of being a drag queen, is understanding your brand and who you are as a persona, I guess, but also as a queen and as a person as well. What do you think are kind of the key ingredients required to build a really superstar personal brand? What has worked well for you?
Authenticity. Mm-hmm. is a big one, being authentic to who you are and not trying to be somebody else. I think unique, being unique and having a special skill set that not everyone else really has. Mm-hmm. And likability. Likability is a big one. I think that comes with authenticity. I think people can really sense if there's bullshit and if you're trying to be something you're not and trying to put on a fake persona kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think though a uniqueness and authenticity are kind of two big ones.
And something that's been quite authentic to your story and your personal story is your background in dance as well. How do you think your training in dance and ballet has taught you to be a better drag queen or has given you the tools that you're using today?
Definitely discipline, which has served me really well because a lot of drag queens aren't exactly disciplined.
Yeah.
So that's kind of set me apart in terms of like punctuality, professionalism.
Yes, you were so punctual today. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, we're not ready.
Yeah, but that's like how I roll.
Yes,
and
that
served me very well in my career because people see I'm a serious person. I show up and I want to do the work and I want to do it well and I want to respect everyone's time and I want my time respected.
Of course.
So I think that served me really well in the professional sector because again, that's not a lot of things that drag queens are, that's not something drag queens are famous for is professionalism and punctuality.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's definitely, I guess, a way that has set you apart.
It has.
And
I'm not the funniest. I'm not like the craziest, zaniest one, but I'm really pretty and very punctual. And I have a great dry sense of humor, and that's been enough for me so far.
And work ethic is something that you can control too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a great work ethic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, since competing on season 11 of RuPaul's Drag Race in America, you've gone on to be the host of the Canadian franchise, Canada's Drag Race, as well as One Queen, Five Queers. You know, you're really building.
And Canada versus the world.
Yes, of course, Canada versus the world. You're building the foundation of really a burgeoning kind of media empire, it feels like. Why do you think, and I think for a lot of people, this question may feel very obvious, but do you think that it's worth repeating and asking the question of ourselves and other people often to remind ourselves, like, why do you think queer representation and drag visibility is so important when it comes to the discussions that we're having today in the community and in culture?
I just think visibility is important in general. And I think it's important that people be exposed to as many different kinds of people as possible, different forms of life, different cultures, different backgrounds, different ethnicities. So it's not just for drag. I think it's just for everybody that mm-hmm. it's really important that people see themselves when they look on TV in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that a little queer kid who doesn't fit in is can turn on their TV and watch RuPaul's Drag Race and see themselves and see someone who's like them. And then they don't feel alone and they don't feel so sad. And they gives them hope that there's something in the future for them. It's not just like this horrible, dark world out there.
Something bigger for them.
Something bigger, yeah. It gives them something to dream towards.
When is the first time you felt like you saw yourself reflected in media and culture?
That's a great question. Probably when I saw Charlize Theron. I don't know. I don't really know. I can't really answer that. There was no. I can't pinpoint a certain time where I was like, "Oh my God, that's me." I remember the first time I saw the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston,
right?
And I think it was, I believe it was Anne Baxter playing Nefertiti.
Okay,
and I was like, I don't know who she is. I don't know what she is, but I want to be that.
Right, right.
I want to, because she was just so bitchy and gorgeous and glamorous. And I didn't know what a drag queen was. I was like 5.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I want that.
Yeah. You're whatever, like, I'm feeling this energy here.
I want that. It wasn't a drag queen. She might as well have been a drag queen, but like, I don't know. She was just so gorgeous and bitchy. And I was just like, it was glamour. I just loved it. Yeah. So that was one of the first times I was like, what's happening?
Yeah. And when you say that she could have been a drag queen, I mean, like, what is, I guess when you kind of talk about drag, what is, and this is kind of like, I think a conversation that has been brought up in the last few years, is like, what constitutes as drag and what does it mean to be in drag?
Well, I think anybody can be a drag queen. That's the thing. I think it's been very specified to cis males doing drag, and then we're like, no, trans women can be drag queens as well. And also straight women can be drag queens as well. Mm-hmm. And men can be drag kings. Like, really, anybody can do drag. I think it's just dressing up and putting on a costume, essentially. Like, becoming something other than what you are normally is kind of how I classify it. So, like, transforming into something else.
Yeah.
So, like, there's many different forms of drag and different ways to do drag. Some of it's done badly. Some of it's done well. But anybody can do it.
Yeah. That's works in progress,
works
too.
Works in progress. Yeah, it's for everybody.
Yeah. And I guess, like, on the subject of, I guess, transformation and the idea of drag being able to allow us to transform, what have been kind of some big moments of where you felt you had really transformed in your life, whether that's through your drag career or just as, you know, in just in terms of your personal development? Where do you feel like, were there any kind of pivotal moments in your life
that I transformed? I think being on Drag Race was a big transformational experience, because it showed me that to not take myself too seriously and to just kind of let loose and have a little bit more fun in drag and not make it, it wasn't such a serious thing.
Right.
Because I was like a pageant girl before, so it was all very serious. and it just, like, it allowed me to be okay being stupid and just, like, having fun and just letting loose and relaxing a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You're obviously also a mentor to other queens, you know, officially and unofficially, especially here in Canada. What does the, you know, next generation of drag queens give you a lot of hope for and make you excited about in terms of this, I guess, this next generation of drag queens?
Next generation of drag queens, they're very, I think they're all very kind of business savvy. They're very hungry for it. They want to get out there. They want to be seen. They want to do something with themselves, which I think is very exciting. I think it's also great how many of them want to use their voice for good and want to kind of see the world change in a positive way. I think that's really great too.
Yeah. And you've seen that through just
social media.
Show,
social media and my show, and how they're all so excited, especially the ones that come from different ethnicities, are so excited to be on the show and represent their culture.
Yeah.
I think that's always really great. Like, they're so excited to just, like, represent their culture and just show different versions of their culture through drag.
And it is beautiful to see that mm-hmm. on, I feel like uniquely on the Canadian franchise as well, because maybe it is because we have a culture of multiculturalism mm-hmm. and we're encouraged to kind of wear that on our back as well. But I do feel like that has been something I've noticed that is a distinct point of view. Mm-hmm. And building on that, you know, what do you think is unique about Canada's point of view when it comes to drag culture?
I don't know. I don't know that we have a super unique point of view. Like mm-hmm. I've seen drag all over the world mm-hmm. and it's not, it doesn't really differ that much. I think it's a very universal language, mm. like from country to country to country. Like you have, there's always like, you have the pretty pageant polished queens, you have the dancing queens, you have the weirdo queens. Like there's, it's everywhere. Like mm-hmm. it's the same everywhere. So I don't think Canada is any different than any other place in the world, drag culture wise,
right?
In my opinion.
Right, right, right. You know, we were talking about drag culture really starting off as a subculture originally, mm-hmm. and now it's such, it's so ingrained in popular culture and mm-hmm. mainstream culture. You know, with that, it's obviously so wonderful to be able to build business and make money off of that. But brands can also really try to capitalize and take advantage of that momentum as well. When I was doing my research for our chat today, I came on this interview where Sasha Velour talked about the importance of equity and exploitation in this context. From your standpoint, how do you really kind of try to ensure that drag culture is providing equity back to the community and its queens, and is not something that is being exploited as, you know, a hot topic from the corporate community, I guess?
Well, the brands I work with, especially specifically around Pride, I always try to make sure they're, in terms of they're paying me, but they're also donating some of the money to some sort of charity. I think that's a great way to kind of get the brands to do a little bit of do a little bit extra. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to do it. Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, the conversation around Pride is that, and I think it's not just Pride, but it's any kind of moment that really focuses on a specific community, whether that's like International Women's Day or Black History Month, there's Pride. Where it seems to be like a moment of time where people will be like, yes, let's support this community. And then after that month is over or after that day is over, then it's yeah. back to the same old program.
Yeah.
Where have you seen good examples of that where our allies or our kind of, you know, the business community has been able to support the queer community outside of Pride Month, outside of those 30 days? Yeah.
Where have I seen instances of that? I mean, there are brands that do things with queer artists, mm-hmm. not just in June. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, of course. I know I've done partnerships with brands outside of June for sure.
Yeah.
Can't think of any right now.
Though. Yeah.
But I know I've done them. Yeah. I put on the spot here. But yeah, they do exist. They do sure. exist. It's more far and few in between. Of course, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see more brands be more inclusive all year round, but got to take it where we can get it.
Yeah. And I feel like normalizing that conversation and making it like any other kind of business opportunity, or just not seeing it as like a one time of the year kind of
yeah.
occasion, right?
I mean, there are gay people the other 11 months too.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, drag culture originally started as a protest when it was part of like the subculture. Mm-hmm. Do you think it is still a protest today, or how do you think that conversation has evolved?
I mean, I think it's, we're still fighting for our rights. Mm-hmm. And we're and freedoms. So yeah, I think it still should be a protest, but also a celebration, because we have made advances from when we started. So it's a combination of a celebration, but also a reminder that it is a protest and that we still have a long way to go and lots more to conquer and overcome. But we've also made some progress. So
yeah.
It's not all bad.
I also think it's so important to, you know, those conversations are so important to talk about, but it's also, I feel like, equally important to really celebrate the wins that you've had as mm-hmm. in the community and like the stories around joy and success, because it is then proving to the next generation and also your contemporaries of like what's possible and, mm-hmm. and what progress has been made as well, right?
Totally, absolutely. Yeah. You have to celebrate the wins.
Why do you think we need drag now more than ever?
I think we need drag now more than ever because now more than ever in my lifetime, in my history, like drag is under attack and queer people are coming under attack again. Mm-hmm. You see, it's been bubbling up for years, but it's really come to the surface the last couple of years. And we need to remind them that we're not going anywhere and that we're people too. And we have lives and souls and families just like they do. And we deserve to be here. So you have to kind of stand strong and remind people that we're all equal and we all deserve love and we all deserve the same rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, or what has drag, what do you think drag can teach us about ourselves? What has it taught you about yourself?
I think it teaches you that you're stronger than you ever thought you're stronger than you ever thought imaginable. Mm-hmm. You're more creative than you thought you were. You're funnier than you thought you were. You're more powerful than you thought you were. And you can do whatever you want if you put your mind to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And is there anything that you wish people understood better about the art of drag?
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I witnessed it today as well. And that's a small sliver of it.
Yeah. It is exhausting. And pay your drag entertainers.
Yes.
Pay them well because they deserve it.
Absolutely. A big theme of what we talk about on our show as well as throughout the pages of a magazine is really talking about mission and purpose. For you, whether it's kind of the decisions you're making on a daily basis or the bigger kind of big picture kind of decisions, what would you say is your kind of overall mission for yourself and the kind of the through line with all the work that you're doing?
It's very simple. I want to make people happy. I want to make people smile. I want to entertain people. Mm. I'm an entertainer. I'm not a politician. I'm not any of those things. I'm first and foremost an entertainer. That's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. So that's what I love to do. And I love to make people happy and make them smile and bring them joy. If you feel like that's my mission here, that's what that's my purpose. So that's what I want to do.
We can always have a little bit more joy too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why not?
Last question. What would you say is your definition of the word glory? What does that mean to you?
Definition of the word glory. Britney Spears. She had an album called
Yes,
Glory.
Yes, she did. Yes, yes.
The definition of the word glory. I don't know. It's a tough word to define.
What's it mean to you? Like, what would glory mean for you?
Ascension to the next plateau.
I love
it. So, leveling up, I guess.
Leveling up.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. If you don't mind, we'll do a quick little rapid fire.
Sure.
And then we can get back to our photos here. All right. Some yes or no questions, some this or that, some like a little bit of commentary. Okay. Nashville or Etobicoke?
Probably Nashville.
Okay. Toronto or LA?
LA.
LA. Best Canada's Drag Race memory or experience so far for yourself?
Hasn't happened yet. Or you don't know about it yet.
The best is yet to come. Okay.
The best is yet to come.
You're setting your dream dinner party. Who's attending and what are you making?
Oh, Jesus.
Or what drink? Or what are you? Yeah.
How many people?
Let's say like an intimate 4 to 6 people.
4 to 6
people. Including yourself.
Okay. Wow, this is a tall order. I am inviting Charlize Theron, because I love her.
Love her.
Robin Wright, because I also love her. Those are like my two screen goddesses. Miriam Margles, because she's hysterical. Naomi Campbell, for obvious reasons. Michelle Obama. I'd like to meet her.
Oh, that is a fierce table.
Rihanna.
Yes.
For some fashion iconness. And Jason Momoa for some eye candy.
Just to sprinkle that in there, yeah, for sure.
And I'm going to serve roast beef, a Sunday roast.
Love it. Love it. Do you have a beauty must have?
Creme de la Mer moisturizer.
Okay. Fave song to lip sync to?
Currently Black Velvet by Alanna Miles.
Yes. Do you have a favorite look that you've worn throughout your career? Is there one that like you really cherish or has been really special to you? Or you just thought you felt like amazing in?
Season 2, episode 1 of Canada's Drag Race is this gold dress that everyone loved and I love too. And then season 1, episode 1 of Canada versus the World. My runway gown was gorgeous.
Yes.
Those two were like standout for me.
Is there an outfit that you regret the most?
Anything from season 1 of Canada's Drag Race.
Okay. Fair. Is there an item in your wardrobe that has a really good story behind it? Like the way that you acquired it or something that happened while you were wearing it? Like, is there something that has like a really great memory attached to it?
I still have the outfit I lost Drag Race in.
Okay.
From my final lip sync.
There you go.
So that's a good memory.
Yeah, yeah. What's your productivity hack?
What is my productivity hack? Like, how do I stay productive?
Yes.
Oh, Vyvanse.
Which one?
Vyvanse. It's an ADHD medication.
Oh, okay, okay. I feel like I know the answer to this, but early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Yes. And what's your typical morning routine or evening routine?
I wake up, I scream into my pillow for about 15 seconds, and I get started with my day. I don't really need
to do that.
Yeah. Like, honestly, here, like, I at home, I wake up and I go to the gym, I guess. Mm. Wake up and, like, I'm an early morning gym person. Mm, okay. I try to go to the gym first thing.
Best career advice you've ever received?
Say yes to everything.
I like that. Biggest risk you've ever taken?
Quitting ballet to become a drag queen.
Mm, yes. And lastly, your biggest role model?
My biggest role model... RuPaul. I mean, RuPaul's a great role model, like, because that's kind of the reason we all have this. Biggest role model, I'm going to say my mom. Mm,
yeah, I love that. Mom. Great answer. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This was fun.
Such a fun chat, and I'm so glad that we got to just have our one-on-one chat and get to know you a little bit better. Yes, I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks, Brooke.
No problem.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?